This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. The opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. You're in the right spot. Big show coming your way today. We'll talk some football. We'll talk some baseball as well. Mariners had their media luncheon today. We had a chance to have a really good conversation with Marco Gonzalez, which we will play for you at 5 o'clock. He's very forthcoming, which is what I love about Marco. We asked him about a few different things, about the expectations on the season, how he deals with that, the cheating in baseball situation going on, because he's a guy who's commented on that in the past. And he gave us, I'll say this, here's a tease, Jim and Dave. He gave us a much better answer than you heard from Jerry DePoto and Scott Service.
So yeah, I don't know.
Tune in at 5 o'clock to hear that.
Yeah, okay. I won't spoil the tease.
Yeah, don't do that.
I won't do that. But it seemed to me with DePoto and Service, they were basically...
They were ready.
They were handed marching orders from MLB how to handle the
Astros. They were anticipating
questions.
Those questions, yeah. You could hear it in their responses. They were ready for them, and... Here's what we're going to say.
This is one of the best interviews I remember a young person doing. I think he's 28, Marco Gonzalez, but he looks very young. But I mean, he's a guy who's been married for 4 years. He's been in the league. And, you know, there, as Service said today, 7 or 8 pitchers last year went 200 innings. He was one of them. And, yeah, so I just I really appreciate him. But he's very forthright. Like, he knows. He's going to tell you exactly what he thinks. So, yeah, it's really awesome interview. I love this kid. This is the kind of guy you want. But, yeah, he gave some really good answers on that I think he did not dance around it at
no.
all.
He said he was going to.
He was very
direct. You got to tune in at 5 o'clock and hear what he had to say about that and the Mariners season coming up. We'll get into what was said at that press conference today with all the media out there. Meanwhile, Joel Corey from a couple of months ago, we had a chance. We've talked about running backs in general and just how they've been devalued, and everybody talks about that. It just, for whatever reason, has just become that position. Most teams feel like we're not going to invest a ton. Yeah, you want a great running back, but the idea of investing a bunch of money into it seems to be further and further from what most teams seem to want to do, because it feels like sort of like relief pitchers. You can find a guy to occupy that spot and be productive. Some guys take it to a new level. Obviously, Henry is a different kind of guy and things like that. But Joel Corey, just looking back at when he was on with us, talking about just not paying huge money to any running back out there.
So personally, I wouldn't pay any running back huge money because Chris Carson's round pick, you can find him anywhere. But that being said, also, the ones who are at the top of the salary tier aren't necessarily earning their keep. David Johnson's done nothing since he got paid at $13 million per year. Todd Gurley is a shadow of himself, of what he used to be. And Ezekiel Elliott's not having the year that he's had in the previous 2 years. If I'm Carson's agent, I point to the fact that the Seahawks did an extension for Marshawn Lynch at $24 million over 2 years. That's $12 million per year. For years when he was going to be in his early 30s, Carson will be 26.
So, I mean, is this a position? I mean, he's going to be coming up for a contract. Chris Carson. We all love him. Love his running style. He's had problems staying healthy. We had Jeff Schwartz say if he's the Titans, he's not re-signing Henry. I mean, Henry's the only reason they got as far as they did in the postseason. I mean, he's as good as it gets in the league, led the league in rushing, yet here's another guy saying, I wouldn't even re-sign that guy. What would you do with Carson?
It's a weird one, isn't it? Because I look at Chris Carson, and he's everything that Pete Carroll wants in a running back for his type of offense, physical runner, but boy, you start, if you take the bigger view of it, as much as you like Carson every Sunday watching him carry the ball, there's the injury concerns with him now. He had the hip fracture there in the Arizona game, so he missed the last game and then the playoffs, and then 2 years ago, breaking his ankle. So he's missed 16 of the 48 games that he's been in his career. So, boy, do you want to invest that much? I mean, you can make a great case for giving Chris Carson a big old contract, but it'd be based on what he's done in the past, and you don't know what he's going to do in the future. As Joel Corey mentioned, he's going to be 26 this season, so you figure you've got another 3 to 4 good years left of him, but...
Well, you got him under contract for one more year.
Yeah, you do, but there's so many examples here, and Corey went through some of them, but boy, the only one right now that stands out of the top five earners as running backs, Ezekiel Elliott making $15 million at the top of the list, ran for 1,357 yards this year, but the rest of them were disappointments.
And they didn't get to
number
the
two salary-wise, Todd Gurley. Number three, Le'Veon Bell. Number four, David Johnson. We saw what... when they brought in Kenyon Drake from Miami, how that reduced his playing time. And then Devontae Freeman only had 656 rushing yards for the Falcons. So it's a conundrum, Dave. That's what I would call it. Well, I think if I'm using that word correctly, what would you do?
Yeah, it's a great question because I guess I would say if he hadn't got hurt, I would say something different. I've said all year I think he's a special back, Chris Carson is. But if he's going to continue to get hurt, and we talked about this, that – the running backs just get pounded. Mm-hmm. I mean, they get hit harder than anybody. And
it's repeated. It's over and over and over.
Right, because, I mean, who else gets hit that much? The quarterback, you don't want him getting hit that much. What, Russ got sacked 48 times? You know, and if you have him run and he turns into a running back, he's going to get hit. Receivers are usually out in space. You know, some of those guys that used to go across the middle, you can't hit anybody.
When you see a lot of guys anymore. Who are, you know, hitting the turf before that big hit comes, right? They're basically giving themselves up these days.
Yeah, quarterbacks. Yeah.
Well, receivers as well. I saw Lockett's become very adept at, all right, here are two guys closing in on me. There's no more yardage to be gained here. I'm going down.
Yeah, well, they're certainly not taking the pounding that running backs are getting. Right. Look where they get the ball. I mean, they're in the tackle box, and there's, you know, usually seven in there that are going to try to kill you. And, you know, it's like we talked about before. That's the thing when you get the ball in your hands in the NFL. Everybody wants to get you, and especially when you're inside, you know, that's where you're going to take a lot of hits. So it's a tough one because yeah, I would like to see, like, what do the 49ers do? Do they pay Mostert? Or, you know, they've got Tevin Coleman. They've got Matt Breida was really good for a while there. He, you know, and he led the team in rushing in the games that we had this year, you know, probably 4 or 5 times. So, you know, I think it's wise to have a stable of running backs. But
which is what the 49ers have. They don't have that. Yeah. They've got Tevin. They've got Mostert. They've got Breida, as you said. Right. But, I mean, we're all prisoner of the moment with Mostert because he just ran for a million yards in one game. But we talked about a season. He ran for a little over 700 yards. I mean, these days, you look at 1,000 yards, you're going, yeah, 1,000 yards. That's 62.5 yards a game.
I know. I was just looking at that.
It's not that impressive. I mean, okay, yeah, you can be productive, and maybe there are a lot of touchdowns scored within that 1,000 yards. But if you average that out per game, 62.5?
Well, and you know, the thing is, I'm looking at my favorite player of all time, Frank Gore. And, you know, he's the outlier. There's, you know, there's him. There's Adrian Peterson. I mean, how many guys in NFL history?
It's a short list.
Yeah, had long careers. So, and you know, you always say the running back doesn't really win you a game. The quarterback does usually. And, you know, running backs are something that you just try to pound them in there. You want to have a running game. But I think it's wise to have a stable of running backs, kind of like they had this year, but you know, and the Seahawks just took the biggest hit in that regard. All three of them going down. So, yeah it's a tough question. I just think it varies. You know,
you buy player to player. Find them anywhere. I mean, Schwartz said he wouldn't sign Henry. You heard Joel Corey there.
I don't buy that.
You can find them anywhere.
No, there's Carson. I mean, look, how many players can run over people the way he does? How many players? I mean, think about all the spectacular plays that he has made. You know. Obviously, the one where he flips through the air. He jumped over a guy in Denver. You know, I was watching last night on NFL Network, and it kind of brought to mind the fumbles, that the problems he's had. But one of them was to Von Miller in Denver. And do you remember that, where he just tackled him and just took the ball away from him and started running? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just kind of a freak play on that one. You know, same thing with the T.J. Watt fumble, I thought. But still, they added up. So those add up, and then the injuries start to add up. I mean, if Chris Carson gets hurt again, you know, and he had an ACL in high school, I mean, yeah, it's not wise to invest a whole bunch of top-end money. The only good news is that the rest of the NFL isn't really paying him that much either.
No.
Right? I mean, Gurley got paid, and look what happened.
You got four guys making double-digit millions because it drops off from David Johnson at $13 million, the number four guy on the running back list, to Freeman at 8.25.
Who are the top four?
Top four, Elliott at 15, Gurley at 14, Bell at 13, and David Johnson also at 13.
Three of those four you could look at as a big mistake.
Yeah.
Right? In the top one, you didn't even get to the playoffs with him running for 1,300 yards. You paid him a boatload of money, and they were in the worst division in football trying to give away the division, which they ultimately did. How did that investment work out for you? And you still haven't signed Dak Prescott yet.
No, I know, but what do you do with Carson? I mean, do you want to let him just play out the contract and risk losing him in free agency?
Yes.
And then what if he has a year like Henry did with rushing for 1,500 yards, which Chris Carson could, but now I think I agree with you, especially coming off of this injury. You got to see what you have, but boy, behind him, you're more concerned about Penny, and it's too bad, and we all know this because we saw how Penny, he was breaking out finally. And I had doubts, everybody did, and then all of a sudden he looked like a first-round pick, and then he had the severe injury. And, boy, Pete Carroll, when he expresses doubts about a guy coming back, you wonder if this is going to be a transitional season, so to speak, for Penny until the following year. I don't know. I'm just speculating. But, boy, mm-hmm. It just sounds pretty severe what you're dealing with there, and that's your backup to Carson. So, boy, then you're just down to Homer and who else?
That's it. Yeah. Procise, if you want to bring him back, he's been fun.
But still, I don't buy what Jeff Schwartz is saying, that you can just go get one anywhere. I mean, the things that, you know, and I didn't get through, you know, the rest of the list of, what about the spin move that Carson had this year when Suggs had him dead to rights in the backfield? We saw a lot of that. We saw him outrun guys to the edge in Cleveland where, you know, there's a corner coming off in a blitz and he just outran him.
So you got him for one more year. So is it, obviously we all look at the season as a make or break on some level, right?
Yeah.
If he plays all 16, he's healthy. Hopefully you get in the postseason. So maybe he plays 19 games. Hopefully, you know, we'll see what happens. But this is a contract year for him. Would you do anything going into this season?
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as I think he's special, I just think, you know, if he gets hurt again, then you're just going to have to say, and it'll break my heart because I just think I love his story, and I want him here as the running back. I think he, you know, if he's healthy, he can be like a Marshawn Lynch type of runner. And, you know, he's got all kinds of things, and he actually has some things that Marshawn doesn't. But, you know, Marshawn has, you know, a track record and a history, and it's too bad. But, yeah, I would not pay him going into this season. Just see what happens and then hope that he'll want to stay here. But also, again, you know, hope that, and I think you can rely on this, that the rest of the NFL isn't really paying running backs.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right about the top four there, three of them being a mistake.
Yeah.
You know, and Ezekiel Elliott, like you said, didn't get you to the playoffs. But still, I mean, David Johnson, that was a huge mistake. He just disappeared.
It's like a healthy scratch on that team now. He's a top four paid running back. I mean, they weren't even using
Kenyon
him.
Drake is so good, too.
Well, he is now. So, maybe next year he's not as good. And all of a sudden we're going, hey, remember that Kenyon Drake?
Yeah.
He was great. I mean, that's how quick they seem to go. One more from Joel Corey. Just asked what he would do if he had to re-sign a running back.
But what I'd do if any running back, care who he is, unless he's a combination of Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith, and Jim Brown rolled into one, I would run him into the ground, then franchise him or transition him until he has limited usefulness, draft his replacement, and then discard him. I know that sounds very cruel, but that's just how I would treat a running back if I was on the team.
So. Wow, that does sound cold, man.
Discard.
I would run him into the ground. I'd just use him till he had nothing left and draft his replacement.
But it's not too bad if you're the running back, because if you're getting the franchise tag, then you're going to be getting, what, 12 to 14 million or something like that.
Yeah, I don't even know what the number is for a back right now, but...
Yeah, and you get, you know, if he's healthy next year, Chris Carson, and let's say his fumble numbers are good, you'd get $12 to $14 million, whatever that's going to be at that point, out of him. And you know, 12 to 14 is going to look cheap in 3-4 years from now. We squawked about $22 million for Russell Wilson. Now it's 35. Now they're getting 40. So that number is going to continue to go up. But I agree. I would not say it. Put it in the way that Joel Corey does, discarding him at the end because
run him into the ground.
But. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those positions where you are going to get beat up no matter who you are. And then, you know, as far as the rest of the league, I feel like you could keep him, let him hit the open market and say, hey, how about you stay here and we'll pay you this amount. And, you know, maybe he'll go for it here. But yeah, I do think Carson is a special player. I love his story. You know, the reason why he wasn't at Georgia was because he blew his knee out. He had a scholarship to running back U, Georgia, and ended up going to some community college for a while and then made his way to Oklahoma State, gets drafted in the 7th round, and he's a great pickup, a great story. But, man, you just can't deny that those guys are going to get just the you-know-what pounded out of them on every year, and it's just so rare that anybody makes it, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years in a row where you don't miss games.
Boy, we sure saw a difference, though, without Carson and Penny, didn't we?
That's why it makes it interesting.
I used to, when Dave talked about the running back being 70% of the running game as opposed to, I always felt like the offensive line was, you know, 80 to 90% of it. But more and more, I'm thinking that Dave might be right about that. Because, maybe if Homer and Marshawn Lynch had been working behind that line all season, we would have seen better results. And maybe if they were playing against weaker opponents, and yet, Dave, I think all season long statistically pointed out Tampa Bay's run defense, San Francisco's run defense, all these different run defenses the Seahawks were successful against with Carson and Penny. And then it didn't happen in the playoffs. And so, yeah, I'm torn on Carson because if I'm him, I'm sitting there going, well, wait a minute, man. You know, I made $645,000 this year. I'm going to make $735,000 next year. When do I get paid? And yet you got guys like Joel Corey making a good point, too.
Yeah, they could extend him if they wanted, but I'm with you. I wouldn't. And I love him just like you do. I love watching the guy play. They were clearly struggling without him. I mean, it's not even a debate. You saw it. We can all love Marshawn for who he was. He's not that guy anymore. And you saw what he couldn't do behind that line that Carson was able to do. And that's all great. And I love it. But the reality is he hasn't been that durable. You are coming up in his final year of his deal. And based on his fragile nature or just unlucky nature, probably a better way to put it, and the ability to go out and find other backs out there, I just don't think I would. I wouldn't make that. I wouldn't do it now. I don't know. The problem with a franchise tag is you can't manipulate it the way you do a long-term contract. It's really punitive to your salary cap, right? If you sign him for 15 or whatever the number is for a running back, 14, all 14 counts against the cap that year. There's no spreading it out and pushing it to the back and all that good stuff. So I don't know how appealing that is for a lot of teams out there. That's a rough – I think that's a rough sign too.
Is the running back like the tragic hero in the game of football in the NFL? That, I mean, you look at some of this, again, the spectacular things that he's done, but nobody's going to get paid. And going in, being a running back – like if you were grooming your kid to be either a wide receiver or a running back.
Say wide receiver.
Wouldn't you say wide receiver? I mean,
look at the top. I think unfortunately for Carson and any other young back who's looking for their next payday, the teams are going to point to, well, look at what happened with Gurley and that investment. Look what happened to Johnson and that investment. Look what happened to Bell and that. We're not going to be the next fool here.
Well, and then wide receivers getting $20
million. Yeah.
Linebackers getting $18 million. Yeah.
Well, and that's what also it just brings to mind Le'Veon Bell, how stupid that was for him to entirely sit out a whole year.
$14.5 million.
Ever going to get that money
and
back.
I'm going to say he will not see the end of this contract. He can sit here and talk about, I signed here for the duration with the Jets. If he makes it to the end of that contract, I'll call it a minor miracle.
Yeah, but, and then Gurley, I don't see how the Rams can keep going with him.
No.
He's not even a – I mean, what would you be okay with paying Gurley right now, $5 or $6 million?
Maybe they go to him and say, listen, it's – you know, we're going to have to restructure this or, you know, they're going to have to maneuver that, go back, restructure the deal to make it more cap-friendly or he gets released.
But, by the way, what a disaster I feel like the Rams are. With this Gurley thing, committing all that money, trading away all their first-round draft choices, and then – I just think there's a huge question surrounding Jared Goff.
And they got to sign Jalen Ramsey.
Yep.
You made that trade for him. They've got
Marcus Peters played great for the Ravens.
Yeah. Yeah, they're in a bad spot. I think they're going to take another step back next year.
Yeah, I hope so.
I think they will be in last place in the division.
So what do you think Schneider should do then? Just let Carson play it out and then draft a running back in the fourth or fifth round or something like that? Don't draft one in the first round, though?
Exactly right. They drafted Christian Michael in the second. That didn't work so well. Procise hasn't worked so well. Penny, you're waiting for him, but he's showed signs. But ultimately, if you're looking in total, hasn't worked that great. So, yeah, I'd say they've done better. Homer's a sixth-round pick. Carson a seventh-round pick. I think you can handle your business and find production there. Let's take two.
Take two.
Mariners GM Jerry DePoto announced today that Mitch Haniger has had a setback that will likely require core surgery. He's expected to miss most, if not all, of spring training.
That's bad news. That kind of came out of nowhere in the press conference. A reporter asking, hey, so is Mitch on track? We expect him to be healthy. And all of a sudden it was, well, actually,
something's happened in the last 40 hours, they said.
Something like, yeah, I think it happened Monday.
Monday they found out.
Yeah, Monday. So he had a setback, and it appears that it's all related to the initial injury, which was a ruptured testicle, which led to the other situation with his back, I'm being told, and this, apparently it's all related. So it's brutal news. It stinks. This guy's shown you that he can be a really productive player, as close to a five-tool player as they've had. We're talking about health, you know, availability. That's your best skill, is being available. And he hasn't been, unfortunately. And we'll see if he can get, how long it'll take him to get up and running. But he misses all of that spring training. So you kind of figure, all right, you got to give him slack when he does come back. So maybe all of April, he's trying to find his timing and his way.
Be like Seager last year.
Yeah, kind of. So you expect, all right, maybe May is when we see the real Mitch, mid-May somewhere. You know,
I might have to postpone Sackstravaganza 3 so I can
part three so
I can bone up on core injuries. Injuries. I don't get it. And I'm sure Moyer has something to weigh in on that, because he had the ruptured testicle. He didn't get a core injury, but you know, it sounds serious, man. I mean, that was no joke what happened there. But this core injury thing, where's this coming from?
Maybe it's just an all-inclusive term, so it could mean hernia,
sports hernia,
you know, muscle strain here, anywhere between the.
How come we didn't have them?
Hey, they come up with all kinds of new terms, like, you know, single high safety and things like that. You know, they all mean the same thing. It's just a new way of saying it.
Yeah, I just wasn't sure about Haniger, though. Remember the last month before he had the injury, he was striking out a lot, and
everybody strikes out a lot now.
An all-star year the year before, and so I. Boy, all these plans of, is Haniger going to be traded in the offseason? And you didn't think, you thought, now you know that's not going to happen. And then I wonder about how effective he's going to be when he returns. So everything's up in the air. But in the meantime, we'll see more of Jake Fraley and perhaps Braden Bishop.
Yeah, and listen, don't worry about production. You got Vogel back.
UW and Wazoo basketball are both back in action tonight. UW takes on Utah at 5 p.m. and Wazoo plays Colorado at 7 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN.
Go Cougs, Dave. Was that called for with Vogie? That was just unsolicited, yeah. Unnecessary.
It was very necessary.
Even after Scott Service
super
said
necessary.
He went to visit, he visited Vogie, and Vogie good. Was in good frame of mind.
You know
he was down on himself last year. He's going to be upbeat Vogie this year.
You know what I was hoping to hear from him? Because he was alluding to something. He was setting it up like, you know, what was interesting that I noticed there. I thought he was going to say he looked leaner. He looked to be in a different condition. He looked like he put in some off-season work on the body. Because I'm not buying that he's a better player because he's heavier. Sorry, Jerry. Yeah, but, not buying it.
No, but that's what we heard, though.
That's okay. Was he really heavy that 1 month where he just tore the cover off the ball and then he lost weight the rest of the season? What happened? Did he get smaller? It didn't look like it.
Not sure.
He's going to be a cult hero in the city of Seattle.
I hope so.
That's the other thing. I know I'm hard on him. I'm rooting for him. I'm a Mariner fan. I want him to be good. He just hasn't been.
Well, I like the question to Service today with, is he going to be your DH this year? Yeah, for right now, he's going to be our DH.
I think there's a very loose commitment to Vogelback, is how it appears to be.
We were track. Supposed to be talking about the Cougs and the Huskies, right?
Yeah.
So the Huskies really need to get back on track tonight. You know, they're 2-4 in Pac-12 play, and the Cougars with Kyle Smith and all their one-star recruits over there are 3-3 in Pac-12 play. Did you know that the Cougars have a better record than the Huskies in conference
it
play?
Sounds
right
like
now.
What you just told us.
Yeah, I know. I wanted everyone to know that.
Hoops. When's the Apple Cup of Hoops?
It'll happen twice. I forget when the first one is.
Doesn't carry the same steam, does it? Same electricity.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
There's not the same satisfaction in winning that one versus football.
I say this Marcus Sahonis kid at the UW, the point guard that came in for Quade Green, I like him.
Yeah.
He's good. He's fun
scrappy.
To watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice that there are things you like about the Husky basketball
team. I mean, he's not as good as Ellaby, though.
All right. Coming up next, what are the biggest position needs for this Seahawks team? We're going to talk to our buddy Joe Fan of NBC Sports Northwest. Get his thoughts on that. That's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, David Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. The Professor John Clayton will join us at 4 o'clock today, but joining us right now on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline, our buddy from NBC Sports Northwest, Joe Fan, is here to talk some Seahawks. Joe, what's going on, man?
Fellas, how are we doing?
We're good. We're good. We're just talking. Let me ask you the question I ask these guys. Just Chris Carson, guy that you love his production when he's healthy. Unfortunately, he's had a hard time staying healthy. He's in his final year of his contract coming up this season, and some people are asking, should you extend him before you get to the end of that deal? Should you let him play it out? I'm of the opinion you let him play it out, that running backs these days are devalued, and you seem to be able to find productive guys for the most part. What would you do? Would you re-sign him to? Would you sign him right now to an extension, or let him play out the contract and take a chance?
Oh, to me, it's an easy one. I think you let him play out the contract. It's a bummer the way things have played out the last, 5 to 10 years for running backs, and the way the position has been devalued both in the draft and in free agency. And I think we're really going to see just how much it's been devalued when, Derrick Henry is looking for a new contract here coming up in a couple months. So, especially coming off the injury, I think there's no incentive for the Seahawks and no reason to rush re-signing him or extending him in this case. And so, it's an easy call for me.
Hey, Joe, we talked a lot about tight ends yesterday and Will Dissly and just how valuable he was. But I'm wondering, when everybody checked out and everything and you heard from Pete, did you get the feeling that that they were going to add at tight end, or that Luke Wilson was going to be back this year, or do you feel like he's moving on?
I think Luke Wilson will be in a similar situation to where he was last year. Whether he gets picked up by somebody going into camp, I'd be surprised if he's on a week one roster somewhere. And that's nothing against Luke. I think he's an awesome guy, but as you see, he's getting up there now, and he had a hard time staying healthy and being a dependable guy, and maybe not the same blocker he used to be, and has never been kind of that juggernaut receiving threat. So, I do anticipate the Seahawks adding someone. I think Jacob Hollister is a nice piece, but he's got holes in his game as well. And you need an insurance policy on Will Dissly, because I think we all are in agreement that he looks like a stud number one tight end, but when a guy's had two straight seasons where it's, ended prematurely with really not just season-ending injuries, but very serious injuries, now coming off of an Achilles. And, I don't think there's any doubt he's going to be back. I mean, he is as hard a worker as you're ever going to find. The fact that he made it back, in time for week one of this season after, the injury he suffered as a rookie, I think speaks volumes to his work ethic in terms of how dedicated he is to get back. So I don't think there's going to be a question he's going to be ready for week one, but you need somebody else there to where you're not putting all of your eggs in the Will Dissly basket. And just because you go sign someone doesn't change your belief in what he can be with the Seahawks. So I don't think it's one of the top needs for the Seahawks, but I do think it's something where the Seahawks do need to address that position either in the draft or in free agency.
Joe, you wrote a story for NBC Sports Northwest with the top five position needs for the Seahawks, and number one, I imagine it on everybody's list, defensive line, just like it is on yours. How do you see that whole thing shaking out? We talked yesterday about Clowney and Jaron Reed, and most callers, and we agreed with them, they need to try and get Clowney back, but not so sure about Reed. And how do you think this is all going to be resolved?
I think you try to get both back. I think there's value in getting guys back in the building who you know and who you believe can be productive. And I think you're going to get a little bit of a discount at Jaron Reed, given what he did in 2019 compared to what he did in 2018. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him sign sort of a short-term prove-it deal to try to recoup some of that value that he lost following the six-game suspension and then only getting two sacks in 12 games. So, including the playoffs. So I do think they try to bring both those guys back. Clowney, to me, just feels so crucial. He's a true three-down edge player. Obviously the sack numbers aren't that, as gaudy as others, but, he's just so good against the run. The fact that he's such a good two-way player at that edge spot makes him so coveted. So I think you got to pay to get him back because, I'm of the belief that outside of finding a franchise quarterback, building a pass rush is the next hardest thing to do when you're, constructing an NFL roster. And so starting from scratch was what the Seahawks would be doing, because I would be shocked if they brought back Ziggy Ansah. That's challenging, especially when you have the 27th pick. It's not like they're in line to get Chase Young to where you have that going in, right? I mean, so it does make it a challenge, and I think you need to start with a couple of building blocks. You have some in-house, and so to me it's imperative you get Clowney back. And then you have plenty of money left over to go sign somebody else, and there are plenty of intriguing names that are projected to hit the free agent market in March.
Hey, what are the numbers that you would attach to both those guys, Clowney and Reed, where you would just say, I would pay them up to this number? Because we saw somebody tweet, that Clowney's range was, I can't remember, it was 18 to 20 or 19 to 21 is what they expect him to get. And then for Reed, they said 8 to 10 million a year. And Reed responded and said something, paraphrasing, like, man, that's incredibly disrespectful, that number. And I'm thinking, How much do you think you're going to make, man, based on the year you just had? What would be the number where you would draw the line in the sand for each one of these?
Well, I think with Jaren, it probably is at that $10 million range. I think you're going to be able to get him for under that, because I just don't think it's easier to find interior defensive linemen. It's just kind of the nature of the beast, right? I mean, even if he was an absolute stud in 2019, he's not going to be making what Jadeveon Clowney would be commanding in the free agent market. So he's at least half the price, if not more so. So, you know, I wouldn't even think about going over 10. I don't think they're going to have to worry about that with Freed. That's at least my projection. And if some other team decides they covet him and pay more, then you can find other guys to fill that role. With Clowney, I honestly think to a point, right, you can't spend all $60 million annually on him, right? But, like, it gets to a point where, like, you kind of give him a blank check and say, we need you, man, and we want you back, and we love having you here. The locker room loves you, and you love it here. Like, this is a marriage we need to continue long-term. And so, you know, I just don't think you can pinch pennies when it comes to a player of his caliber, whether it's like, you know, all right, you know, we are offering 20 and you want 21. Like, really? You're going to get stingy with this guy who could be the face of your defense, you know, for the next, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. He's still so young, you know, he's got plenty of good football left in him. And so I think you get him a little bit of the blank check treatment and, you know, just let him know that he's a guy you have to have. And, you know, the salary cap is so easily manipulated, and teams can get so creative, whether they change guys' contracts and make it front-loaded, back-loaded, whatever the case may be, to create space when needed. So to me, it's more about getting the players that you need on the roster, because you are always in win-now mode when you have a quarterback in his prime like Russell Wilson.
I saw you have corner on the list. I tend to agree, but not because Trey Flowers is so terrible, and I feel like that's been overdone. That's just my opinion. I saw he has 7 penalties this year, and I would say of the 5 that were pass interference, he had coverage on 3 or 4. And, you know, I feel like he just sort of needs to trust himself a little bit more. And, you know, he's got 3 interceptions this year, a couple of sacks. What's the feedback that you're getting from people? Do you find that people are, you know, kind of overreacting with Trey Flowers? Do you feel like there's more criticism than is deserved, or that it's about right?
I side with you. I think people overreacting a little bit, you know, to what was a tough playoffs for him. I mean, I think that's fair, right? You could say he had a couple of tough games in the postseason, but I think you also have to look at his body of work, and there were some encouraging moments as well. And I mentioned this in the story I wrote, that number 1 and number 2, defensive line and offensive line, are so far above the other 3 that really, I mean, I should have changed the numbering to be 1 and 2 and then, like, you know, 8, 9, 10, because I do think there's such a big gap in terms of how severe the need is. I think my biggest thing with Trey is that I don't think you can go into his year 3 and say, he's our starter, that's it. I think you need to bring somebody in, let him compete, whether it's a draft pick or a veteran who is looking to prove himself and show that he's still got some left. Trey Flowers is going to be on the roster. We know that. And I think he's got some upside, and he's got the build that Pete Carroll loves to have in his corners. And I think he's kind of a project player that Pete's not ready to give up on yet, and he'd be silly to. My thing is with him is, this year you went into training camp knowing who the 2 starting corners were going to be. I think going into training camp in 2020, there needs to be an idea of, okay, there's Shaq on one side and it's Trey or X player or draft pick or 2 that are going to be competing for that other starting spot.
Joe, always good stuff, man. We appreciate you taking some time with us. We'll talk again soon.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, guys. Always enjoy it.
There you go. Joe Fan of NBC Sports Northwest talking some Seahawks with us. Meanwhile, the Mariners have a good number of top prospects. How long has it been since we've been able to say that? According to Baseball America, but could this be a bad repeat of history? We're going to talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Yes, he could have, Dave. Coming up at 4 o'clock, the Professor John Clayton will join us here with Bob, Dave, and more. Meanwhile, we told you the Mariners have a good number of, I think they've got, what is it, 5 prospects? 5 in the, according to Baseball America anyway, 5 top 100 prospects. Last time we saw that, and by the way, they are Julio Rodriguez, Jared Kelnick, Evan White, Logan Gilbert, and Noelvi Marte. Last time they had that, it looked like this. James Paxton, Taiwan Walker, Nick Franklin, Danny Hulson, and Mike Zunino.
2013.
Didn't work out
quite Officer Franklin?
Yeah.
Remember Officer Franklin?
Yeah.
What was that about? Yeah. He put on like the security guard's hat or something like that?
I can't remember how he got that name. I remember the name. I don't remember how that came about. But
how did he get in the top five there? Or yeah, whatever that was.
Yeah, we were kind of wondering that too.
Yeah, I mean, Zunino made sense. Zunino was a stud coming out of college, played college ball.
Third overall.
Hit really well at the college level, and everybody thought, this guy's so mature, he's going to make that transition. And defensively, he did. Holtzman, they called the most big league ready of that bunch of pitchers. He was the one that was ready, and I feel bad for what's happened with him. I think
didn't he appear for the Cubs, though, this year?
I think so, yeah. But, I mean, considering what was expected of him, and he's just battled through injuries and just never happened, Paxton was the guy who paid off the most. I mean,
and Paxton out of the big three, I think he was probably number two, and Holtzman was number three, and then Taiwan Walker on this list, too. And what's he coming off of Tommy John surgery?
Yep. And, you know, he didn't really take that. We always fear guys taking that next step and becoming great when they go somewhere else because we've seen it so much in the past, but it didn't really happen with him. Now, Ketel Marte did. All of a sudden, this guy who's tiny is hitting home runs left and right. Maybe that's got something to do with a juice ball, but he was a guy who initially went there and failed, got sent down to the minors. That was the Mitch Haniger deal, right? Taiwan Walker and Marte in exchange for Mitch Haniger and Gene Segura.
Mm-hmm.
The Mariners won that big initially out of the gates. Segura's an all-star. He's the guy who's leading the league in hits, all that good stuff. Haniger's a star in the making. You fast forward, it's evened out a little bit. I still say they got the better of it ultimately.
Maybe. Right now it's basically Marte for Haniger.
Pretty much. I mean, it didn't lead to a postseason for you, obviously, but Segura was productive while he was here, then became a problem.
But then you got to factor in, I forget who they got for when they shipped Segura to Philadelphia, though.
J.P. Crawford.
Oh, okay. Well, so then, you would put the Mariners ahead of the Diamondbacks in that trade. But you look at the five prospects now. Julio Rodriguez, number 8 on Baseball America's top 100. Kelnick at number 11. Evan White, number 54. Logan Gilbert, number 59. And Noelvi Marte, a shortstop, at number 92. So, yeah, you got to figure that Evan White's going to make it. He's going to be, don't you?
I mean, you like to think they plan
on him starting the season.
Did the service say he would be shocked, or there would have to be a lot to go wrong
for him not to be your starting
first baseman? A lot would have to go wrong in spring training.
And you could probably say the same thing about Rodriguez and Kelnick, too. And Kelnick, we heard word today that there's a chance that toward the end of the season, maybe a September call-up for him. And then Rodriguez still probably a year away, but it wouldn't shock him if he appeared in a Mariner uniform at some point this year either. So I look at those two outfielders, those two prospects, that they're going to come in. Although you might have said the same thing about Zunino back at the same time period too.
Yeah, I mean, the draft in any sport is a crapshoot. It's a gamble. We've seen guys that we watch in college. You have a much better sense of college players in football because you watch them every Saturday. At least you have some frame of reference. A lot of these guys, you hear the name over and over, but you don't see them play until they've been in your system for a number of years. And guys wash out all the time. They look like monsters at the college level. They get drafted in the top 10, and then boom, this guy's a bust. And that guy's – so there's no exact science. And it's even more of a crapshoot in baseball. As much as, they're rated number 8, number 11, who knows what's going to happen. So I'm not going to say because it didn't work out last time you had 5 there that that's what's going to happen this time. But –
they could be Hall of Famers, too.
They absolutely
every
could.
Time you hear Rodriguez's name and Kelnick's name, you superstars attached to him. So I'm hoping that's the case. I think every Mariner fan's hoping that's the case. And, I mean, you look at those two guys being fixtures in your outfield for the next 10 to 15 years, starting in 2021 or 2022.
That would be huge. Who was the guy that was picked so high that we always looked sad and I don't even know.
Ackley.
Dustin Ackley.
The guy that picks so high always looks sad.
His name, Dave. He did look sad.
Well, yeah, and I just felt like he didn't have the what it takes in baseball to be, and that's cockiness. Sorry, and Andy McKay talked about that today, and I'm not saying
Nick Franklin wasn't short of that.
All baseball players are cocky, but I'm saying today Andy McKay talked about the whole thing with Rodriguez and Kalanick, and told a story about Rodriguez and how, you know, he kind of winked at the pitcher who, you know, got him and then took the next pitch over the center fielder's head, and then Jared Kalanick and he was talking about how, you know, you don't like people that are cocky and arrogant, right? But we need them to be that way. And I'm seeing that out of those two guys from all the stories that you hear anyway. So I like that part of it, and maybe that's something that Ackley was missing a little bit, or maybe some guys are just too nice or whatever. But, you know, I've heard this whole thing about Jared Kalanick, but he really likes himself and posts things about
himself.
He's
a big fan of him.
Yeah, good. Fine. Yeah. Bring him on. I mean, I think
if that's a plus in their eyes, then awesome. Well, they've had it before, though. As I said, Nick Franklin had some strong confidence in himself.
Yeah, some of those other guys really didn't. I didn't see that kind of swagger. And Andy McKay, I thought that was interesting to hear. That was probably the most interesting thing I heard. Because really, I don't know about you guys, but really what I care about this year is seeing some of these guys.
That's all this year is about. This year is not about where do they finish, what's the record going to be. If that's what you're basing success and failure on this year, you're going to be wildly disappointed.
Well, and that's not just us sitting here on sports radio saying that. That's what DePoto said today.
And that's what Service said. I mean, basically, everybody's geared up for what record-wise will be a rough season. This is not a playoff year. You're trying to – Scott Service said, hey, once it's game time, we're trying to win every game, but it's more about the long-term goal instead of the short-term goal. That's how they're approaching this whole thing. So this year as a fan is about watching what the future looks like. Not the immediate future, not this year, but just looking at maybe you isolate a couple of individuals, whether it's Evan White or anybody else or J.P. Crawford, and seeing how he matures or Shed Long. It's about looking at what's on the roster and what's coming up on the roster and projecting forward, because this year's results, it's not about that, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you know, it would any other year would be really disappointing about Mitch Haniger, the injury that he suffered on Monday. He's got to have core surgery. He's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks, and he might not return until sometime in April and miss all of spring training. But that opens up a spot maybe for Jake Fraley. I'm excited to see what that kid can do. Braden Bishop, I like him, but not as much as Fraley. And then Kyle Lewis, we'll see him every day out in left field. And then Malik Smith will be in center field. I'm not so sure why Malik Smith is going to be in center field, but maybe he's the best option. And we saw enough of him out there last year that I don't think he's going to be part of the future.
All right, coming up, what in the heck's going on with Antonio Brown now? Yeah, there's more news surrounding him. We'll get into that. Everything else in the NFL with the professor, John Clayton, joining us next year with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.